Do you feel like you're moving in the same direction with your spouse, or are you just landing in the same room together every night? Well, today I'm joined by my friends Gino and Julia Barbera, and we're going to talk about the importance of being on shared mission with your spouse, collaborating with each other and supporting each other. Money can be a major stressor in marriage, but it's also a tool for a whole lot of good. This is Heidi St. John, and you have found the Heidi St. John podcast. Stick around. I think you're going to be encouraged. All right. So Gino and Julia, welcome back to the podcast. I'm glad to see you.
Thanks, Heidi.
Yeah. So good to see you again, Heidi.
So last time we were talking, you know, I realized, oh gosh, there's so many different areas that I think would be beneficial for the listeners of the show that I really just, I want to jump into. But the first one is the most obvious one about the two of you, and that is that you work together, right? And so I'm like, listen, I'm fascinated by this because I have worked with my husband now for 36 years. And oftentimes we're working very closely with each other, and sometimes we're not, but typically, and now for sure, I mean, he's at the Friendly Planet Homeschool Resource Center where we do everything together. And I'd like to know kind of the history, because you guys started off kind of in the restaurant business, right? So you've never really known anything else, correct?
That actually is true. I never thought of it that way, but yes.
Girl, I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
Thank you.
You let me know if you need to like diagnose anything. Just let me know. I'm your girl.
Yeah. This is our therapy. I think you said it. You know, my husband did buy the restaurant that I worked in. And so we've been working together for probably, 27 years or so. And it's interesting because we get this question all the time. Like, how do you do it? How do you, you know, raise the kids, but also business wise? And I think my number one way that I would love to hear your
therapy. I feel so good about this. Me, this is good. You guys are on the clock. It's fine. Just lean back.
Yeah. Giving up the need to be right is my number one way that I could work with him.
So the only way you can work with your spouse is if there's no way to make any excuses. When I have to do something, it's not like, Julie, I'm a little tired. Yes. And when she has to do the laundry or has to get on this podcast, she can't make excuses. And that's how we live our lives. And that's how that's you true. Raise six children. Yes. We haven't written how many books? We've only written four books. Julia, she's got her, I know Heidi's got, I think, nine. She's got, how many kids? You have seven kids, Heidi? How many?
Yes,
you have, we only have six. Remember? So, I mean, we're slacking, but what I think, you have to enjoy it. That's the thing, right? I think we have a lot of fun together and we stay in our lanes. And I can count on my wife. And I think my wife can count on me. And when something goes wrong, we try not to blame each other. We try to fix the problem.
I agree. I think everything you said is accurate. 100%. But I do think having a sense of humor is the key to a happy marriage and a happy, happy work together relationship, right?
Yeah. I have a quote written down over here, Heidi. I want to share it with you. If you seek comfort, you will deprive yourself of self-knowledge. And I think our relationship as was built on comfort early on. And as we got to know each other, we started doing things differently. I never thought we were going to have home births. I never thought I was going to homeschool. I never thought I was going to leave the restaurant. I never thought I was going to start a podcast.
Right.
And the very first recording that I had with my wife on our podcast, I'll never forget it. I was recording in my mother's basement. And I had just started recording for a couple of years. And one of the questions they asked, so, you know, how was it working with your wife? And I said, and I don't know if she'll probably correct me. I said, yeah, my wife, when we got married, she was really lazy. But nowadays, she's really a hard worker.
No, you did not say that. You didn't. No,
I'm going to send you the recording.
But let me put it into context.
He said it as a joke. But sometimes a sense of humor comes out a little off.
Read the room.
Okay, so but let me expand upon that. Let me redeem myself. I am coming from the frame of reference of my life 2 or 3 years ago, where my wife was homeschooling six kids. She was doing four loads of laundry a day. She was cooking three square meals. She was helping me write books. When we got married, it was just me and her, and we didn't have to work as hard. So I meant lazy in that context, as opposed to lazy today. See,
Heidi,
I'm redeeming myself.
I just want to tell you, your reaction, I actually watched myself on this recording. I'm going to send it to you. I handled myself really well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you should have saw my face. I had no facial expressions, but after the podcast, I'm like, forget it. We are not doing a podcast for ever 2 days. I'm like, I will never do this with you ever. And I was grumpy and I was resentful and I had to sit with it. And I said, my gosh, do I want to be like this? And I'm like, God, you want us to do something great in the world. I got to get over this. And so we joke about it. Because I had to look back and be like, all right, it was technically a joke on his part. Okay, he doesn't have a great sense of humor like I do.
Apparently not.
But those are the moments. Like I said, it's like we have to learn to get over the little things.
Okay, so I have a theory. And you know, and my husband and I have talked about this a lot over the years. I really think that one of the things that helps a marriage thrive and go the distance, right? Because we just actually had the Kane & Vox team and Katie Faust, all those guys were at Firmly Planted, and we were teaching young people. We were talking actually about sexual identity and sexual ethics and marriage and the complementary nature of a man and a woman, like is evident in our bodies, right? This complementary fashion that God has made us in. And we were talking about the seven loves, like the Greeks sort of came up with the seven loves, right? There's phileo love, there's agape love, there's eros love, eros being of course sexual love, which is what our culture has absolutely idolized. Like that is the ultimate love. And so we find our identity in that, right? Well, Katie was just like, that's not how you get to 35 years of marriage. Like eros ain't going to get you to 35 years of marriage, right? Mm-hmm. Sturgos love, the familial love, the friendship love. You better have a good friendship, right? Lugos, the love that allows you to laugh and have fun with each other. Those, like, you know, eros might be the gas that gets the engine going, but then you got to keep that going through a sense of what I would call shared mission. And this is really what I want to ask you about. Because as I was listening to them talking about the seven loves and how the culture is just on its head right now, because we so idolize sexual love and the youth and all that, but we're getting older. Okay. We are. And I was thinking to myself, it is for in Jay's in my life, and we actually talked, Jay and I wrote this down, I want to say it's been 15 years ago now, that we wanted to have a sense of shared mission. And like something that we were, that the two of us were really walking toward together. So beyond like him at his job and me, you know, homeschooling the kids or whatever it was I was doing at home, in everything that we did, I tried to participate. So when he was a worship pastor, I participated in that as much as I possibly could. And we had this sort of sense of shared mission. How important, you guys, because it seems to me like that's also part of what's keeping your marriage going, is this sense of shared mission. You're dreaming together. You're like, what can we do that is good for the culture and provides financially for our family and gives us a dream, something that we can go to? And then I want to ask sort of how can people find their sense of shared mission?
My wife says it best when she says there are certain phases in your life when maybe you can't do that. And that's okay. When you're raising kids and they're three and four and 6 years old, and my wife wants to stay home with the kids and be a home, you know, someone who stays home with the kids, that's okay. But as you start growing and as you start getting more uncomfortable, and the quote that I shared with you, then we started getting really, I guess, on the same page. All of a sudden, we started writing a cookbook together. And that was the beginning of like, okay, this is really, really cool. How do we take it to the next level? Then we started doing videos together. And then from there, it just continued to blossom. And I like working with her because I like working with people who are hard workers, people, like I said, who don't make excuses, people who find solutions. Don't give me the problem. What's the solution to the problem? And I love
anyone can outline the problem. Right, right.
Yes. I don't know if you like that.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think when those moments, and this is all the women listening, I think, especially when we have little children at home, and we want to do something, like we want to do a podcast on marriage and family, and we can't. I think just being an example in the world, a lot of times we take the easy route, like we get someone to watch our kids, we can go grocery shopping. But the impact you have on taking your family to the grocery store all together.
It's so true.
Eight of us would go to Trader Joe's and we would get stopped all the time.
Yeah. You're making an impact just by walking in the store.
Exactly. And I don't think you realize what impact we had on so many people that we're never actually going to meet. Yeah. And people would
come up to me all the time. It was just your normal. You were just doing life. Yes. You weren't trying to make a statement.
Exactly. Yeah. Basically, we would go to restaurants. We would eat together. We'd pray before a meal. And so you're just being you're showing what family looks like. You're showing what marriage looks like. I think so. There's moments in your life where maybe you can't be on a show, but you can do that. And I think that actually prepared me to be here right now with my husband, because you need all those experiences. You need to be out in the world. Because like Gino said, the comfort thing, it's so much easier to be comfortable. Like I've done it before and I'm like, something's missing. Instead of take all my kids, I'm like, that's what was missing.
And I think too, you know, when you've got something, I mean, Jay and I started our nonprofit and it's been 27 years ago now. And he was the one who saw in me, like, you have a gift for speaking, you know, you should do that. And then pretty soon, you know, he's coming up alongside me trying to help me with what I'm doing. And I've spent, you know, 20 some odd years trying to help him with what he's doing. And we sort of developed this sense of shared mission where we look to see who's up to bat, right? What is God doing right now? And if the focus is on my husband, then I'm going to come alongside him and I'm going to help him. And if the focus is on me, he's coming alongside and he's helping me. But we end up doing this thing in tandem, right? And I think the world is like working real hard to separate husbands and wives and actually separate families. I mean, parents from their children, this is the whole nature of the school system. You know, we do it at church. We drop our kids off at the youth pastor, you know, in the morning, dad goes away to work, mom's home doing her thing, or, you know, or maybe even mom's going to work. And we miss that sort of sense of shared mission. Gino, how important has it been in your relationship with Julia to have this sort of thing that you guys are working toward together? Have you felt like that's been a really important part of your marriage?
I think it's the foundation to our marriage, because whenever she's got problems, and what I love about it is I have struggles at work and I'll ask her, I can share my struggles with work, and who else can I trust more than my wife? I'm having a rough day. Leads aren't coming in. Residents are giving us headaches. I can talk to her and I can, you know, I need her as a sounding board. So for me, it's been so critical. And when we got to dinner, we have things to talk about. We're not only just talking about the family, we have other stuff that to talk about, and it gets really, really exciting. I mean, we want to start teaching the youth about personal finance. So how do I do that? I love doing that with her because she has a different way of looking at things. She has different ideas than I do. So when you have two minds working on one thing, you get so much more and you're able to brainstorm and you're able to collaborate. Okay. And I really enjoy it. I love talking business with my wife.
Yeah. It's fun. Jay and I were out to dinner a couple of weeks ago. And he's developed like a database that it's super awesome. So for probably the last 15 years, he's been working on this software that helps us with class registration here. So it manages the payments to the teachers, that does class. It can tell you what room you're in, who's registering, who dropped out, what the wait list is. It's just this incredible system he's been working on for a really long time, but it needed a new name. So we're sitting there, you know, just trying to figure out what we could name it. And I started talking to him about, oh, hey, I also have my like sourdough starter, which I've talked repeatedly to your wife about. Like I'm in my sourdough bread era. Okay. This is the era of life that Heidi St. John is currently in. And I say to my husband over dinner, what do you, you know, help me name this thing. Cause this is what we do. We sit across, you know, the table from each other and then we just start buying domain names. We're just buying domain names. Like there's no tomorrow, right? So I said to him, I want to buy Seaside Sourdough because I have like a total love of alliteration. I will do alliteration, you know, every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And so we try to buy Seaside Sourdough, but it's taken. And I was like, that's too bad. Jay was like, that is so sad because you just love alliteration. Wait. Your last name is St. John. Why can't you buy St. John sourdough? And I was like, that is such a good idea. So he's on his phone trying to find if stjohnsourdough.net is available. And I'm over here trying to see if the .com is available. And we're like the Wonder Twins, like, you know, it's, you know, but we're having fun. Right. And maybe nothing will come of it. I mean, we did, by the way, buy St. John sourdoughs, you guys. And it's really cool. I'm selling my little starters and all my favorite sourdough tools and all the fun things because I'm addicted to bread. I love I should have been Italian, but I'm Irish. Doesn't matter. I'm still addicted to bread. Yeah.
But Heidi, what's important that you've said, though, is this is something I think that maybe the listener may not be capturing. You aren't competing with your husband. You're working in collaboration with your husband. And I think spouses sometimes at some point may say to themselves, well, I want to sound better than maybe subconsciously or unconsciously. I don't know. But
I think you're talking about yourself here. Hold on a second. We're uncovering something here.
What's really? What are we uncovering?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay, so since you're uncovering, please.
Well, I know. I like that you said that because a lot of times, you know, you know, you were the front runner. You were on stage all the time during the podcast. And then here I come, you know, holding a baby. I'm like, hey, can I, you know, let's be part of this and see how it goes. And I, you know, I'm just saying a lot of times there can be a little bit of,
but there never was with me. No. I always wanted you to succeed.
I'm joking.
Okay. I just, let's put, make it out there for
maybe,
clear.
Maybe I'm getting back at you at the lazy,
and then the
lazy one.
The funny thing is this is a true story. As far as being a life coach, I became a life coach first. She used to make fun of me and she goes, what is this life coaching nonsense? So we went to an event of mine one time at Christmas time in New York. It took us 2.5 hours to get to this event. And we're downstairs at this real estate event. And she really never knew what I did. She's like, what do you do for a living? And I tried to explain it to her, but she didn't pay attention to me. And after the event, people are coming up to her with tears in their eyes. And they're saying, your husband has changed my life. He's so wonderful. Thanks for giving him to me. And she turns to me and goes, what do you do? And I said, I'm a life coach. And finally, she became a life coach. And I have to say, she's much better than me. She's amazing as a life coach. And if I was the person that she said that she was, that I'm trying to compete with her, I would never want her to share that gift. Mm-hmm. And you said, how do you find the gift in people? She's a mom. She's compassionate. Mm-hmm. She's caring. She's nurturing. She can be tough. She can be disciplined. These are all things you want from a life coach and from someone who's trying to get you to the next level, I think. And when I saw that in her, I wanted her to become one right away. And as right now, she's a high performance coach. She's even better than me right now, not only a life coach. And I love that because that makes me feel proud that I can share her and her gifts with others.
It's good. And that's part of what makes, I think, again, it's that sense of shared mission. You know, you're kind of on mission together. I mean, the first mission that we have as married couples really are our children, right? We're raising our children together. We have a sense of shared mission. We kind of know the direction that we're going. You got to get away and talk about that. But I think it moves into the business realm too. And Jay and I, we went to Bible college, for goodness sake. We didn't come out with a degree in business. And so that's been the most challenging part for us. But the two of us are dreamers. And we just have so much fun dreaming together and we love people. And so you put those two things together. Jay's a guitar player and I'm not. I love to listen to his guitar playing, but I'm not a guitar player myself. But he'll say, you know, because sometimes people say to him, in fact, it just happened last week. Someone said, you know, don't you feel weird? Your wife is up there on stage in front of everybody and you're back here running the merch shirt, you know, the merch table. Yeah, and Jay said, you must have missed the first 23 years of our marriage because Heidi was running the merch table and I was up on the stage and now Heidi's up to bat and I'm running the merch table and we're in it for each other. You know, we're not in it for ourselves. And I think that's so important, especially now because there's so many people looking to supplement their income. You know, thank you to Joe Biden and Bidenomics. He's literally killing the country. I mean, taxes are worse than they've ever been and people are really struggling. You guys have also managed to do, you know, you're dreaming together, but you're also making money together. And before we started recording today, Gino, I was really curious, you know, I'm kind of curious about the side hustle because one of the things that people ask me more than any other question that I get about our life together is how were you able to make it financially? Well, first of all, I always tell people it was hard. I always want people to know that, like, you see what you see now, which appears to be success, but you didn't see the iceberg underneath that, which was the late nights, the crying, the failure, so many failures, so many things that didn't work. And we just, you know, we felt like, nope, this is the direction we're supposed to go. And we didn't give up. But I'm curious from you because you're into real estate, right? And you guys have had a restaurant and now you're life coaching, both of you doing that. So obviously, you know, you're doing business. When you think about successful things that husbands and wives can do together to earn a living, a shared income that comes and benefits the family, what are some places where people can start?
The first thing you need to start with, the very first thing is you need to have a plan together and you need to understand the words. August 30th, 1998, we got married and my wife became financially free. I didn't. She never worried about money for the rest of her life.
I chose very wisely.
I'm not saying you did.
Potential. I knew that. I watched you work. You had good work ethic.
Giving you the facts. There was a shoebox. The shoebox had money.
That was
and
back
she was
in
set.
The cash days.
Yes. But my point to that is that we had different thoughts and aspirations about money. Yeah. I wanted to make money and become ultimately financially free with real estate because I didn't want to worry about a $5,000 dental bill. I wanted to have my mother-in-law come down here and be able to rent the home from us. I wanted to be able to share my money with others and have impact. She didn't understand that that was my picture for financial freedom. Once I shared that with her, everything changed. Money wasn't this evil thing. Money is just a result. If you're really good at something, it just shows up. And the first thing I think couples need to do is to get on the same page, understand what their psychology of money is, what their relationship with money is. I was raised by two immigrants. My parents are both from Italy. I was a great saver. It was hard for me to spend the money. So every time she spent an extra $50, I'm like, what are you spending the money for? We got to stay on budget. But that was on me. I didn't understand that relationship.
It took us over 20 years to figure out, oh my gosh, we never really talked about why you look at money the way you do.
I'm actually reading a book that you told me about, Julia, called The Psychology of Money.
Yes.
Because we came from, Jay and I both came from different backgrounds, and that has been eye-opening for me. Really good for me to see my relationship with money. I feel like I have like PTSD from money kind of growing up. And also just, you know, our early years in the ministry, the very first church that my husband ever worked at, they pay you just enough so that you're not, you know, destitute, but really not any more than that. And if you ask for a raise somehow, that's wrong because you're supposed to be ministering to families and people in ministry should not earn a living, apparently. And so I had all these just bad, like money just was a thing that I was just constantly, we needed, but we had a hard time getting. And then when we asked for it, we're bad. Try to get a raise, you're bad, right? And so you said, hey, you should read The Psychology of Money. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
There's another book that I'm going to recommend. We're interviewing the gentleman this evening. It's called Happy Money. So what I love about, what I love about happy money is you can have happy money, money that you work for, that you know that comes into your life. And then your mindset also plays a big role into it. If you have a scarcity mindset and you're always looking for that extra dollar and you're trying to screw people over,
it's very
you have unhappy money. So do you want to live with happy money or unhappy money? It's really your paradigm of where and how you're looking at it from life. And it's taking me years to finally understand this. And now that I make money, I don't feel as if I'm evil. And I think profit is just the fuel. It's not the destination. So the more money that I can make, the better I can do. My priest told me years ago, if there's no margin, then there's no mission. So get over yourself. You need to make money to be able to start a business, to be able to fund the family, to be able to help an orphanage, to be able to build a hospital. I'm sorry, but the last time I saw poor people weren't building those things. Rich people were. And not every rich person is evil and not every poor person is great. Has nothing to do with money. Money is such an inanimate
object.
It's
a tool.
It's just a tool. If you understand that and you dive down into it and you don't work for money, you work for a result, everything in your life will change. Before I became financially free, I was always worried about paying the bills. I was always about making money. So at the end of the week, there was something left over. Once I understood to build a business and to get into real estate and to start serving our residents, now we own over 1,600 apartment units. That's a lot of residents that I'm working for. The more that I can serve, the more money that I can make, I can continue to build the business and I can continue to employ more people and I can continue to create impact and be on podcasts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I don't have to worry about making money.
Right.
And I think too, something important is everything that Gino's talking about years ago, it used to have been, that's his view. And I would just be, okay, that's fine, whatever. And I still had my, my view on money that I think we talked about it probably on the original show that we were in, Heidi, where I always thought money was just evil, had like a negative. And so I never wanted to have it. I didn't want to know about it. I did not want to know how much we made. All of that. And so we had a disconnect in our marriage for all these years because we never really discussed it. You know, he would have his view. This is why I do what I do. This is why I get freaked out when you spend too much on groceries. It's not like I was going out and buying these fancy
$4,000 a month on groceries. I was like, dude, what are you doing? The budget is only $3,200. Why are you spending $3,000 a month? The best story was when we just moved to Florida, I started a budget with my kids because I want my children to understand money, right? Because credit cards don't really paint the picture. Send your child into the grocery store with $100 and let them have only $100 and tell them to buy groceries. We'll see how hard that subject and that topic is. But I remember 3 weeks into this month, my son is 15 years old at the time. And he's like, Mom, $3,200, we're over the grocery budget. And I was like, yeah, Mike,
I said,
thanks.
Okay. I said, that was a good month. I hope you enjoyed the food because that's it.
So what ended up happening was we took control of our money. We said to ourselves, okay, let's go to Costco. Let's start a Costco membership and let's start looking at where we're diverting our resources. Don't have a budget. Have a spending plan. Which includes,
because when you go to Costco, you also come home with the Vitamix.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, truly. I was laughing with my daughter and her husband the other night. And they were saying that they had saved, you know, $800 that month by just going to the local grocery store for apples. You just walk into Costco and you come out with, you know, the raft thing that you blow up and put out in the middle of a lake, you know, and you're like, hey, did you get it? Or I love it when you go through the checkout at Costco and they're like, did you get everything? Yes. Yes. What they should be saying is, how many things did you get that you didn't come here for? Oh, girl, it's, exactly. You know, look on the conveyor belt. Well, that'd be everything.
That's when we stop taking our kids. We stop taking our kids grocery shopping to Costco, to those places where they just couldn't help it. Right.
I still go there and the guy says, wow, you got a lot of stuff. When somebody's telling you, well, you've got a lot of stuff at Costco.
Are you having a party? No.
You've got issues. That's
We're not having a party.
My son-in-law, I ran into him at Costco. Like, I don't know, this is quite a while ago. He looked at me and he goes, oh, hey, mom, that's like a $500 grocery cart right there. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, we know. Like, we just know. And the truth is, you go into Costco, especially if you're going in with the Citibank card, right? Yes. You're not paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
You're not.
No.
To what's happening to you.
Yes.
Right. And so we did. I started. I didn't tell you this, Julia, but I started dehydrating apples. I think this was. Mm. I don't know. This might have been.
You did that a small amount of time.
I'm in my sourdough era, so it gets confused with the sourdough. But anyway, but I quit going to Costco for apples. Because I came out with, like, you know, apples and that cute new jumpsuit, you know, and all the things, like, oh, how do you need a pair of Crocs? No, you didn't. You went in for apples. But I have no self-control.
Well, now you're in the psychology of money and you'll understand why you're doing that because you get a dopamine hit. It makes you feel 100%. Good in the short term. Yeah. And if people don't understand that, they're doing these things unconsciously. And we were doing them unconsciously. Yeah. Once you understand why you're overeating or why you're gambling or why you're spending too much money.
Why you're spending so much money on Amazon.
Yes. Oh, Amazon. Yes. Gosh, that's true. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon, they're the worst, right? Because you get on there and you need something and it's instant gratification, right?
Well, that's the thing too, is that we're teaching our kids because we have a problem. So we go to Costco and buy all this stupid stuff. And then Amazon too. Oh, you need pencils? Oh, like, oh, look, they're going to come tomorrow. It's like, well, why do you need them? You know? And so it's interesting watching the kids. Oh, I could just hit buy now, mom, right? I'm like, no. I'm like, hold on a second. We got it.
Sailor did that to me the other day. She wants these like curler things for her hair. And for like 4 days, she's like, mom, they're in your shopping cart on Amazon. Mom, it's in your shopping cart. I finally was just like, listen, Linda, you don't get to get on my Amazon account, right? Did you work for that? She just kind of looked at me and I'm like, yeah, looks like you've got some extra chores to do. You mean to buy the whatever thing for your hair? It was like $9.60. I'm like, go clean out the car.
Yeah.
Right. If you want to do that, take the vacuum cleaner out there and the Windex and wash the windows and then earn the thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we just live. I mean, the dopamine thing is so true. I mean, it really is. We live in such an instant gratification. And we end up spending more than we bring in and people don't even know that they're doing it. And then you just live paycheck to paycheck to paycheck. And someone said to me, and I'd love to know what you guys think about this. Someone said to me one time that I had a scarcity mindset when it came to money. And I think it's true. And I still battle it. And I'm sure it's because of, you know, how I grew up and those first years of, I kind of like, we all have PTSD from Lerona, right? I have PTSD from money just early on. And like you, Julie, I just didn't want to hear about it. Don't want to know what's in the bank account. Don't want to know what's going in and out. Don't talk. It just stressed me out. Like I just, you know, la, 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 la. If you tell me you live inside of a budget, I can do that. But just don't take me deep because I don't want to see it. Well, I kind of wonder as we're, you know, we're kind of moving into this, you know, these conversations around money. How is it that you change your mindset and do what my friend said to me one day? He just said, how about you stop thinking about how you can save money? It's always like, I need to save, I just need careful, 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 careful. He said, what can you do to make more money? Mm-hmm. What can you do to grow what you're doing? And so instead of the mindset being, we just need to be super, super careful, it was, we need to dream more. We need to figure out how can we generate more income for our family or for our business or whatever, What do you think about that advice? I mean, it worked for me, so don't slam it too hard.
No, that's the world that I live in. But what I would say to your children, the best thing that you can teach your children is if they make $10 an hour and it costs mm-hmm. $50 to buy that chair, are you willing to work 5 hours of your life to buy that chair? And if you are, great, buy it. If not, it's not something that you should buy. It's a need versus a want. So make them anchor it to something, because if they're just looking at curling, oh, it's only 10 bucks. This is only 10 bucks. It starts adding up. But specifically to your question, I changed my wife's mind and attitude about real estate when I told her about saving for a specific event. We are taught in this economy, because they want to be able to control our money, to save for retirement. Put it in a 401k. Let's save for college. Put it in a 529. Let's save for a wedding. We'll put it into a bank account. I finally realized back in 2011 to save money to buy an asset to pay for that event. And when that event is over, I still own the asset. Our very first deal that I bought with Jake back in 2013 was a 25-unit property. We paid $600,000 for that deal. I still own the deal. Every month, that deal has been paying me between $8,000 and $9,000 a month for me, my brother, and my partner, Jake. There's three of us. So that's an average of $2,000 to $3,000 a month in cash flow for the last 7 or 8 years. Well, I've been able to pay my daughter's college. She's graduated. My son is graduating college, all from that one asset. Now, when all the kids are finished going through school, I'm going to still own that asset. I still have the equity in the asset. It's still producing cash flow. If I had saved $300,000 or $400,000, that money would have been gone and the event would 100%. Have been over. So I think people have to understand, are you working hard for your money? And you absolutely need to work hard for your money. But is your money working hard for you? That's the second part that the vast majority of us are not doing properly. And when I realized that and I understood that, I was like, how do I make my money work harder for me? I just had to learn the skill of real estate and put time and effort into it and understand that's the mindset. Just don't save for the rainy day, because when the rainy day comes, the scarcity mindset says, I'm not going to pull that money out because I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. The abundance mindset says, I've got the asset that's producing cash flow. I could sell that asset, or I could refinance that asset, pull some equity out, and then I still have the asset. There's such a difference. It's minute, but it takes a little bit of time to work on. And The Psychology of Money, that book that you're reading, is going to help you understand your relationship. Because listen, if you don't hate money, if you don't like looking at money, if you don't like looking at your bank account, if you don't want to attract money, you're not going to. It's like anything else in life. Well, if you're averse to it, you're not going to.
I think too, I remember having children as he had the restaurant. And every time we had a baby, anytime I was like big and pregnant, people are like, oh, got to save for that other wedding. Oh, got to save for another college.
Instead of saying, congratulations, you're having a great kid.
All that was in my head. I'm like, oh my gosh, we got to save. And I'm like, I was so overwhelmed. Like, I don't want to know anything about it. You do it. And so we were taught that. I mean, I was raised with, oh, we don't have the money for that right now. And that's all I heard.
Yeah, me too.
Thinking. And that's what messed me up.
And the other part of that problem is that God does provide. Yeah. And I was afraid. And I didn't have the faith to say that he will provide something. I'll make it happen somehow. Yeah. And instead of people saying, hey, congratulations, I may have 10 or 11 kids. If people will be like, yeah, good, another kid. Instead, they're like, you know what?
I don't think it would work that way.
I think it would have. Every time we got pregnant, my mom would be like, you're having another kid? I'm like, thanks, mom.
She was always the last to know.
Fearful.
Everyone in the restaurant would know. She'd be like, what?
Well, but the truth is, I remember when Jay was working as a pastor at a church in Washington State, when we said that we were pregnant with our fifth, the senior pastor was just like, you're going to work harder. This is going to be hard. And I think this is very, very common in the church, right? Very, very common among Christians, you know, to just sort of have this mindset and then we're stuck. And frankly, the economy, I mean, honestly, it's not helping, right? Nope. It really isn't. Taxes are brutal. I was going through, cause we just had our taxes done the other day, and every time I'm just like, what is happening? You know, people taking way more money than they should be taking, even just out of your paycheck. And the nonprofit here just got slapped with a $122,000 property tax bill, an 87% increase, Gino, 87%. Wow. And you know what the worst part about that is? 45,000 of that goes to the school district. like the school district that I'm like cleaning up your mess all the time. And now I've got to give you $45,000 of our money. It's very, very frustrating.
I'm hoping you're going to an attorney that you're going to be grieving those taxes. I'm assuming I'm hoping.
Well, actually, you and I are going to be talking about this offline because yes, we are going to do that. Okay. Because it isn't right. You know, I mean, at some point you have to just be like, okay, this isn't cool. And I also have learned, I mean, I'm sitting in a $16.4 million building right now that we own debt free. And I know, because God did that and God can do it, you know, and I want people to know that. And you know, we either believe that he owns the cattle on a thousand hills or we don't, and we can live with the scarcity mindset, or we can go, no, we serve the one who actually owns it all, which is such an important lesson to learn. But what I want people to get out of this podcast, particularly as with you guys, is to say, hey, for one, you've got a superpower in your spouse. Your spouse is a superpower in your life. They're the one who comes alongside you and can pray for you, can encourage you, you can trust them, you can dream together, you can struggle together. Sometimes the struggle is what gives birth to that beautiful dream, right? That, you know, because you dreamt because you saw a problem and you wanted to solve it. I think that's really important. And then the other thing is to expect an increase from what you're doing, right? Try something new. There's a lot of people listening to this and they're just so frustrated by inflation. We know the grocery prices are terrible. Even at Costco, the grocery prices have gone up. And I don't actually see a relief in that anytime soon. I think it's going to be here for quite a while. But there are ways around it. And if people would change their mindset and if they would start looking to the superpower that is the marriage relationship that God's given, you guys can dream together. You can build something together. I know that there are a lot of people that are listening to this that want to do what you guys are doing, and they want to do what Jay and I have been doing, you know, for 30 some odd years. And it's difficult, but it's worth it, right? You guys, I mean, the investment that you have made into your family and into your business is paying off, isn't it?
It is. And I would say, I'll take it one step further as far as creating wealth and legacy. I just had the epiphany about it a year ago, maybe 6 months ago. One of the reasons why I'm making all this money is because I want my children to find their passion. I was the one 5-6 years ago saying, this one's going to go into business with me. This one's going to college. And now that I have the money and the luxury to tell them, you know, choose what you want to do. My oldest daughter was a missionary. My son right now is going to go back to being a missionary in the summertime. He has that opportunity because he has no school debt, because he's a good kid and he deserves it. And I want to give it to him, and I want him to find his passion. I want him to find his gift, what God created him to do and why he was put on this earth. And he can't do that if he's got $150,000 in student debt. He can't do that.
It's a whole lot harder.
It is. It's three, but you do go down the math, a car payment, mortgage, student debt. I want to be able to alleviate that. That's why I'm making money. You need to have a reason why you're making money. It's not just, I want to become rich.
You got to have a reason for all this stuff. I mean, yes. I think you're touching on something we go all over the place with, because you got to know your why. Mm-hmm. You got to understand your why for homeschooling.
Yeah.
You got to understand your why for staying married. Mm-hmm. You know, I just did a podcast the other day and someone was asking me about, you know, Christians getting prenuptial agreements. I'm like, I just think that's garbage, because you go into the marriage with like, well, in case it doesn't work. No, you got to have your why. You got to understand your why. And I think the same thing is true with money. The same thing is true with raising children and you know, what's your value system? What's important to you? It all belongs to God at the end of the day. Yeah.
Yes.
And everything we have belongs to him. Mm-hmm. And so praise the Lord. You know, I mean, that's what Paul said, right? He'd learn the secret of contentment. He's content whether he has a lot or whether he has a little. So much of that is a mindset. And what I've been encouraging Christians to do now for many, many years is just ask the Lord. If God's laid something, not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody has a head for business or even cares, right? Mm-hmm. But there are people that are listening to this who really do have a heart for it, and they really do want to learn, and they really do want to start a business, and they really would like to, you know, become a life coach or become an author, whatever it is. And I love what you guys are doing, because you're showing the regular people like Heidi St. John, oh, you can do it.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. And you need courage. I have to put that out there, because it's easy to say, oh, I'm going to do this, especially with social media. Everyone's out and everyone has their perfect life and they're all done up perfectly. And they're right. Their lighting is good. Their videos. I could never do it like that. And my advice to everyone is just just who cares how it comes out? Who cares if you have the same shirt on? I always give my husband a hard time about that. Just put out the content. Do whatever it is you know what I mean? If you're uncomfortable with those people in this grocery store that like, really, you're having another kid, like negative, because I know we both have gotten that plenty of times.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Be courageous and just be like, yes, isn't that amazing? Like, be that voice that they don't have, because there's a reason why they're so not okay with it. You know what I mean? There's a backstory behind there. So be compassionate at the same time.
Yeah. So good. So good. You guys are awesome. This has been a lot of fun. If people want to connect with you, where can they do that?
JuliaAndGino.com. Don't know why her name's first. I guess she's better than me. Maybe not, but JuliaAndGino.com. You can go to JakeAndGino.com if you want to learn more about real estate. But we have our show launches every 2 weeks, and we have amazing guests like yourself on the show. We talk about family, communications, working with your spouse, making money. What else we talk about? We talk about so much stuff, and we have a great time with the guests as well.
Yeah, we do. You guys are hooting hollering good time. Well, this has been great. Thank you for doing it. We'll be in touch. Let's do it again soon.
Thank you, Heidi.
Everybody, thank you for listening today to the Off the Bench podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, check it out, HeidiStJohn.com/podcast. And I will link back to all things Gino and Julia in the show notes today. Don't forget to please leave reviews for the show wherever they are available. That really helps us grow the show. And if you'd like to subscribe, you know how to do it. Hop on over to Spotify. If you have a question for me, I would love to answer it. HeidiStJohn.com/mailbox Monday. Love your people well, you guys. Have a great afternoon, and I'll see you back here again at the intersection of faith and culture.